Coming up on AI Having a Clue.
We talk AI in space.
One way is to ram into the asteroid with a spacecraft. You can also push it gently.
Emphasis on gently. James tackles a live listener question.
You've said, do you want a meeting? And they've said, no, I'm going to send my AI bot instead.
Yeah. Well, they don't sort of decline it because they come. I mean, you look shell-shocked by this.
The AI challenge returns.
Let me just take a second to go, I'm genius. And we have this week's news. Welcome to AI Having a Clue. It's the podcast that unpacks artificial intelligence one mystery at a time. My name's George Butler, and yes, a highly average human being, as documented in a newspaper quite recently. Thanks. Genuinely, thank you to the AI for that lovely review. And you are?
I'm James Chandler, resident AI expert on the pod, increasingly getting caught up by George, though. Maybe we'll get into that later.
In this episode, James, what we got coming up?
We've got all sorts of things. We're going to space. We're not really going to space. We're talking to the UK Space Agency for a fascinating conversation about how they're thinking about AI. We've got all the latest news from the world of AI. We talk about schools. We talk about work-life balance. And we talk about another one of your flaws, which you love to find as well, with Apple.
Another flaw. Interesting. Plus, the AI challenge is returning, and we'll be blasting off to space.
Very good. Very nice.
The special. Our listener question goes live. Because the other day, we had the honour, for the first time ever, to take this podcast to a live audience. Yeah. 300 people at the Engage conference. It was good fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like it was sort of like on home turf for me. It was quite bizarre wearing two hats at the same time. So Engage is a big sort of tub-thumping, celebratory conference, really all about digital advertising. The theme was about creators and content. And it felt kind of perfect for us to do. So it was kind of like what we do here, slightly more compact. And we're going to take the listener question from that. But I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I enjoyed us doing the AI challenge live for the first time. And James, for the first time, not getting it right front of hundreds of people. I could not have been happier.
I don't think we're going to include. I'm sort of looking over at Molly now. She's shaking her head. Yeah, we're not including that.
Yeah, that's a shame. You know what's interesting, though? Taking it live, taking it to people, being in front of an audience and chatting to people afterwards may have heard the show. It's really interesting hearing what people are saying about AI and the way that I think people are starting to adopt it a bit more and understand it a little bit more. When you chat to people who may listen to this podcast, what's the reception, what's the reaction that you're getting?
I think it's mainly from people that I don't work with, actually, kind of outside of my world. So I hesitate to call them normal people, but people who aren't in this kind of media bubble that I'm in, who are probably a bit more exposed to it, like genuinely learning stuff about some of these big companies. We talk about Google, we're talking about Microsoft, OpenAI. And then, you know, the stuff that goes down really well is the slightly more frivolous and fun stuff, the fact that AI can't tell time and things like that. But, I mean, you were talking to people at Engage as well. I mean, what are people saying to you?
Well, I think sometimes people who definitely haven't heard the podcast, but maybe have seen that we have this podcast, think I know a thing or two about AI.
Yeah,
they couldn't be more wrong. But I think that's the interesting thing, is that they're really curious about it. And there is this mutual appreciation that we need to understand what's going on in this world. And that's the thing that I'm finding really interesting, is that people seem to be getting on board with going, what is this thing all about? What do we need to learn? And look, hopefully that's what this podcast is all about.
Yeah, for sure.
Right, let's kick off now with what's been making headlines in the world of AI this week. Now, James, you know I'm all for finding a little bit of a flaw in AI. I don't love it to be too perfect, and Apple are helping me out.
Apple have released a paper that is suggesting that AI reasoning models, and I'll come into the explainer in a minute, have limits when it comes to solving complex problems. So there's a whole furore. People are getting very excited about AI reasoning replacing kind of the way humans think about things in a really logical way. So you've got two things. You've got large language models, which is the idea that models, they predict the next word. That's what they're trained to do. So your sort of classic ChatGPT thing. So they take loads and loads of text and they can just give you a response really quickly. Large reasoning models are this kind of newer breed, and they are specifically trained to reason. So they don't just spit out an answer. They go through kind of this thinking process, which you can actually see on the screen. And they can do really difficult, complex things, kind of like what humans can do.
So could you give us an example of the reasoning side of things and how it might work in practice?
So kind of like just like a chain of thought, the way you would self-check things. So if someone asked you like a complex logic problem in your brain or maybe even out loud, you'd be kind of going through, well, yeah, does this fit with this? Or I'll write this thing in. Like anyone who does like Wordle or a Sudoku or something like that, you might make a few guesses, scribble out and do right. That's what these kind of reasoning models are doing. So that they're trying to mimic human logic. Now, Apple have released this paper. It's called The Illusion of Thinking, which is a bit cheeky in a way. They're basically saying these models don't think. Everyone's getting a bit too overexcited about this reasoning thing. They're not actually that good. They're doing a really good impression of it. They basically looked at some of their competitors. So you've got Gemini in there, which is Google's OpenAI's, their whole O series. Apple are saying they do really, really well on simple tasks. But when it comes to complex tasks, they bizarrely just stop trying altogether. They kind of give up. It's weird. Mm. And they actually lose, they use less tokens rather than using more.
What do you mean, yes, tokens? So
tokens are like the Lego bricks of language models. Everything that AI has done is built on tokens. So doesn't read sentences, it breaks all the words down that you ask it and it puts it into tokens. So you would think for really complex things, it's going to use more tokens, for stuff that's really easy, less. But this is what Apple are saying. It's flipped. It's actually these competitors are using less tokens with these big complex problems, and they're kind of like giving up. It's like having an arm wrestle and realizing you're going to be beat and just letting the other person win.
Hmm. So I'm pretending I understood that. Apple, am I right in saying, are a little bit behind in the kind of AI race? What, is that right? And why are they doing this? What's going on?
Well, they're sort of, they wouldn't say they are, but there's a kind of a belief that maybe they're not advanced as some of the others. So they're kind of gearing up to get into this AI arms race, specifically around this this reasoning model. So kind of classic Apple playbook. This is what they do really well. Apple always play the long game. That's their move. There's loads of examples from where they kind of don't jump into these trend things or what everyone else is doing. They let everyone else kind of spend the money, get the headlines, and then they'll wait and see what to do. They did it with privacy and tracking. So all of the big tech platforms were using data to target people. Apple came out and said, actually, we're going to ask people if it's all right to kind of track their data. If you remember back to when the iPad first came out, they were under huge pressure to put like a USB port on the iPad, but they resisted. They were like, no, we think the future's about cloud computing. They're happy to sit back and wait. So this is classic Apple playbook. They're trying to kind of control the narrative around what these reasoning models are going to be capable of and do before they get into it. So they want to do it on their terms, which is a very Apple thing to do.
Interesting. Now, we've been talking recently about AI in schools. Mm. So there's been questions about AI helping people with homework, students with homework. Equally, how some colleges in the States especially are turning back to handwriting essays.
Yeah.
Because obviously AI can be used to cheat. There is a new breakthrough in education that has come to light this week.
Yeah, I love this. The teachers are basically going to get help with AI tools to help do all of the stuff that takes up their time, which means they're not doing face-to-face kind of in real life learning with their pupils and their students. So if you think about it, teachers mainly at kind of primary and secondary schools, they have this thing called PPA. Teachers will be nodding in violent agreement with this planning, preparation, assessment time. It's built into their day, but it's time where they're not teaching in class. So they're doing things like marking, they're doing things like lesson plans and lesson prep. If you can get AI to do all of those things, teachers are going to spend more time in classroom with students doing the things we actually think they're doing and probably the things they like. So I love this story. It's a really good use case and application of AI.
It is, but...
Ah, here we... Hurrah!
But is there a slight irony in schools going, oh, no, AI. Don't you use AI in your homework. Oh, stop using AI. It's not the world. You need to learn. And then going, well, we're going to use AI to mark everything. Is there a bit of an irony there?
The irony is not wasted on me. I think the good kind of outweighs the slightly 2 points that are in conflict. But I just think, just imagine if like 90% of all that stuff, and we've talked about it in the work context, like expenses and timesheets and all the stuff that we don't want to do. If you can give that to AI to do and find a way of just doing more with students, I think that's a really good thing. Particularly, I think budgets are really tight. chronic shortages of teachers in different places in the country, I feel like this is a really, really, really smart move.
Yeah, you ask any teacher.
I bet.
Every teacher I ever speak to says things are really tight, really stretched, really difficult at the moment. And anything that's going to help them teach kids better is going to be good. You're right. It's a positive news story. Talking of which, AI is reportedly enhancing our work-life balance. Is this so?
Yeah, this is a new study from HP. They've shown that AI tools are becoming increasingly helpful, not only to people in doing their jobs, but helping improve their work-life balance. And I think probably anyone with a job would heartily admit that they struggle getting this right. I mean, I certainly do. The idea that you can finish your job and go home and not think about it and do all that sort of stuff. A third of business leaders from this report said that they found over 11% in cost savings from AI, which you probably expect, and they got rid of some of the admin stuff and the kind of the more boring stuff. 72% of them said that it saves time. And there's a whole bunch of people, which I think is the interesting bit, saying it's actually making their jobs more fulfilling. So they're actually enjoying what they do more.
I mean, yeah, you can see that. Cutting back on all of those boring admin tasks that AI can do. Do you think as organisations become wiser and understand AI a bit more, and we all know that sometimes organisations can be occasionally a little bit slow to keep up with tech changes.
Yeah.
Do you think that there is a risk that actually these efficiencies are just going to become baked into our everyday and you'll just be expected to do more of the other stuff?
Yeah, you could do. I mean, we had that brilliant question a couple of episodes ago and they were kind of talking about the inevitability of jobs being taken. It probably will. And my answer would still be the same. Yes, you're going to maybe expect people to do more, but there's going to be sort of different things that you want to do. There's going to be different jobs that there's going to be people to do. So, again, you would expect me to say this, but I'm sort of net positive here. And I think what it comes down to, I mean, read any sort of business leadership book. I think more fulfilled, more motivated, more energised employees, that is only good for business. People who are dragging themselves in to do mundane jobs they don't want to do, less so. But again, I think nice application of AI, if you can get this one right, with a cautionary note from yourself as well.
No, I mean, it's certainly true that people are increasingly turning to AI to help them with everyday tasks, whether it's writing emails, coming up with itineraries, whatever it might be.
What are you using it for in your day job? You must be using a bit of AI here and there.
Well, I do. You know what? Genuinely, and I'm not just putting this on for this podcast, I would say up until 3 or 4 months ago, I didn't let myself use it. Now, obviously, there are forms of AI that, you know, smart speakers, all that kind of stuff. Things like ChatGPT, I had this thing of like, I'm not doing it. I'm not stooping. I honestly, I do start to use it more and more. I don't love using it to write. Mm. I do genuinely think you can tell a lot of the time, and it feels wrong. And I just think people, things are more authentic when written. But no, I do. I am starting to use it to enhance my life a little bit. And I mean, we did see the other day, ChatGPT went down.
Yeah.
And there was this like colossal, like, oh my God, what am I going to do? How can I live? How can I work? People are starting to really rely on it.
100%. It's a little bit exposing. It's almost like when your sort of electricity goes down, you know, what am I going to do? I think it's testament to sort of how ingrained people are using it and how important it is. I like the fact that you're coming around, though. I like it.
I mean, it's hard. This is the whole point of this podcast, right, James?
For sure.
It's hard to not come around to it. Mm. And I think we all are getting there at our own pace. It's even with this podcast, you know, we pulled together things for social media and we'll use AI, and it enables us to do things as a small team that we wouldn't have been able to do on our own. But it is funny because honestly, 3, 4, 5 months ago, I almost refused. It was like a refusal. Like I wouldn't let myself do it. And now, I don't know if I'm learning more from you, James.
We're
perhaps I'm picking things
two
up.
Experts by the end of this, by the end of season one.
Believe me, we're not. Maybe we're like 200 episodes in, I'll understand what some of the things you're talking about mean. Right now, sadly not the case. So, we talked about it earlier. We had the absolute pleasure of stepping onto the IAB Engage stage and doing this podcast live. So much fun. Hopefully we get to do that more in the future because it was great. It's always nice to be laughed at for being a right muppet in front of many, many people. I embrace it.
I didn't really feel that. But
funny that. But one thing we did do is open up our AI question, which we do every week, where essentially, if you haven't heard it before, James tackles a really difficult, hopefully, question about AI. And we took it to the floor, we took it live, and I think we've got a clip now of a brilliant question that was sent in from Liberty in the audience.
We're going to pick Liberty's question, and that is, if AI is taking notes in an online meeting, does that mean I don't have to pay attention anymore?
So
I don't pay attention anyway, but okay, that's fine.
Okay, so the ripple of laughter tells me people know it. Do you know what this is?
I have no idea. Okay. Of course I don't know what this is. Highly average.
Highly average. Maybe just average after this. When you join a Zoom or a Google Meet, now you will get people in that meeting who say, can you allow my AI to join as well? And what the AI is going to do is going to come in, take the notes, share the actions, that kind of thing. Or, worse still, people don't come to the meeting at all and they send their AI as like a proxy to do it. You look shell-shocked by this. This is new news.
Hold on a minute. You've said, do you want a meeting? And they've said, no, I'm going to send my AI bot instead.
Yeah. Well, they don't sort of decline it because they come. I mean, it's odd, okay? So if it's your meeting and you've got a bunch of people and faces on the screen, to then admit a kind of an AI bot in is odd. And you look around at the screen and people, I think at the moment, don't really understand how they feel. There's a big consent thing going on, so...
Does everyone have to agree to it being there?
Well, we don't know. We haven't worked this bit out, but it kind of should, because we don't know what notes are being taken, where they're being stored, how they're being shared.
The big issue I'm seeing here is I can't talk about my boss like I usually do in my meetings. I can't...
banter's going to be quite hard. So the thing that...
I'm in trouble.
In the plus column... AI is not going to get distracted by Slack or go off and make a cup of tea and do all that sort of stuff. It's going to be pretty accurate at taking the notes. If any of you have been in that meeting where you've got probably 10 or more people and everyone's sort of doing their own thing and different agendas, I mean, it's excruciating. So AI is not going to be put off by that. In the less good column, it's going to miss out on your witty, highly average banter.
Witty.
For example, if you made a flippant comment like, well, we should just get rid of her. You know, AI may interpret that as that person should be sacked.
Word.
And that could be shared in the notes. We've obviously talked about the consent, which is a little bit problematic. And we haven't really worked out the etiquette around this stuff. Like, is it all right for someone to send their AI? Is everyone all right with AI?
Can I do a quick thing here? Would you be able to raise your hands if you have an AI bot that you sometimes send into a meeting? There's a few. Okay.
That hand there was like a. I'm proud.
Yeah, well,
that wasn't a tepid kind of.
It's probably gonna be one of those things that in 6 months' time it's like, yeah, well, you don't have one. You know, you're losing out. So.
What if you're running the meeting and it's just 30 AI bots and you?
No humans ever listen to me in meetings, so effectively nothing has ever changed. Thank you for that, Libby.
Oh, to answer the question, because that's the point of the thing,
yes.
Isn't it? To answer the question, Libby, is yes, you do need to still pay attention. I don't think we're going to be in a world where you just sort of send the iBot to do it for you. As you said at the start, the most interesting thing we're hearing on the pod is humans have still got their hand on the tiller. They've still got that oversight. This is probably no different.
I will say, live on stage, you did a very good job there.
Yeah, keep this coming. I'm sort of kind of enjoying it. It was a nice question, actually. And I was fascinated by those hands that shot up when you asked them who was sending AI bots to meetings. I mean, there are a lot of hands. Some people, unashamed, yeah, I am.
I've been telling people literally for the last few days since we've done that event all about it and like how many people are in the audience that have them. I am still shocked by it, still baffled by it. I think it's, I don't know if I said this on stage, but I think it's kind of rude. I think if someone said they were sending an AI bot instead of actually turning up, I think it's a bit rude.
I want to be there when you get your first one. At some point, it's going to happen to you and you're going to be so conflicted. Like, do I let this person in? Do I not?
I'm going to let it in, say something a bit nasty to it.
Let it in. So,
and then be like, email this to James. It'll probably come from you. You'll probably send it in like one day into the podcast because you can't make it.
You're channeling your Sergey Brin again. You're going to be mean to it.
I'm going to be mean to it to get the most out of it. We've learned that from Mr. Google. Now, of course, if you have an AI question that you would like to put to James, you know I'm going to say it. Make it as tough as possible. Make him sweat in that chair, please. You can get in touch with us loads of different ways. Email aihaven'taclue@gmail.com.
And we're on all the socials, so you can just leave us a comment. You can find us on Instagram, on LinkedIn, the very professional network. We're on TikTok.
The tickety-tockety.
Tickety-tockety and the stackety-stickety.
Yes, Substack, we're there.
Professor Massimiliano Vasselli is one of the UK's leading experts on AI and space systems. He's based at the University of Strathclyde, where he leads groundbreaking work on using AI to plan missions and deal with all sorts of things, including space junk.
Amazing. His work sits at the fascinating intersection of AI and space, from mission planning and autonomous spacecraft to tackling asteroid deflection. He has recently done some AI research, which has been funded by the UK Space Agency. And in this conversation, we're going to explore how AI is not just supporting space exploration, but actively shaping its future.
Thank you so much for joining us. You're Professor of Space Systems Engineering at the University of Strathclyde. You're also Director at the Aerospace Centre of Excellence. For those who may not understand the titles, sort of thinking of George here, can you explain to us what you do?
Space systems is pretty much everything that we launch into space, including the rocket itself or whatever you use to control what we launch into space or receives data from what we launch into space. Okay, so systems is pretty much everything that has to do with space. In particular, I cover one aspect, which is how things are moving in space. So orbits and which trajectory spacecraft follow in space to go, for example, from one planet to another.
There's a couple of reasons why I'm not sure I could do your job. Firstly, because I'm not clever enough. Secondly, because I don't think I'd be able to get any work done, because I would just be looking at my colleagues all day going, it's not rocket science, and laughing. But when it comes to AI, what's the exciting things that's kind of changing the way in which we work, and I guess moving on from traditional systems?
Well, there are many things that are happening, and I have to say that one thing in particular is that we are trying to understand how much AI can actually help. You know, nowadays, AI seems to solve everything from making coffee in the morning to, controlling spacecraft. Certainly, one thing is processing data. So you have a lot of things that are flying into space that are generating a lot of data. We need to make sense of what is generated, so how we can actually use this. The other thing that is happening is a kind of byproduct of the use of ChatGPT and alike. That is interesting because it changes the way we communicate with machines, but also how they communicate back to us. Everyone probably has some form of experience with agents that are helping, like Siri on a phone. Mm. You can talk to now a machine, and that machine can do something. So we are, in fact, developing artificial intelligence agents that are communicating with us through text, or we can talk to them. And they can assist in designing new space missions. They can assist in operating existing spacecraft and making sense also of what is happening in space.
To give us a sense, we've talked a bit on this podcast before, specifically about the UK, and the UK government have a very pro-innovation agenda when it comes to AI. Clearly, space isn't just limited to us. Lots of things happening in AI in China, a huge amount of things happening in the US. Help us understand the role that the UK is playing. Where are we on the kind of the world stage when it comes to AI and space?
I think that we are right there where we should be. We could do definitely much more because it's an emerging field. We definitely need to invest more simply because there are other countries that are moving quite fast with the development of AI applied to space. There is a lot of interest in managing traffic in space, for example, or understanding what happens to the space environment around the Earth. That is a critical aspect in which AI can certainly help. But it's important that we master the use of AI, because the space environment around the Earth is quite a fragile environment. And we need to use it properly. Now is a critical point where the UK can really take the lead, or at least be at the forefront, because things are moving very fast.
So how do you go about bringing in change and embracing AI and what it can do, but also looking after literally the planet and making sure that we're not rushing things or doing things that are unethical or unsafe?
There are certainly a lot of problems with the ethics around the use of AI, because just an example, we currently have a problem trying to identify responsibilities for what happens in space, right? So suppose that something is crashing in your satellite and you lose a service, and that caused an incident on ground. It's quite difficult to understand what caused the problem in space. Now, if that was due to an AI agent that autonomously decided to do something, again, it's quite difficult at the moment to understand who is responsible for that. So that's definitely one aspect. I mean, when it comes to exploration, we have to, in a way, delegate to the probe, the spacecraft, to do what we want to do, right? Because we land on Mars, but it's not us landing on Mars. So that is a rover landing on Mars. So the level of autonomy is not at the moment so high that we cannot really control what is happening. But with the expansion of AI, of course, that will become more and more independent of what we decide. And there are, of course, questions of planetary protection, so protecting the environment from what we are doing. Because every time we explore, we, in a way, change the environment.
I'm fascinated by some of the things that you've done. You've tried to work out how to deal with things like space junk, which is a sort of amazing concept as it is. And you've worked with the European Space Agency to try and remove debris and even deflect asteroids. Tell me about how you think about deflecting asteroids, and has AI got any sort of role here as well?
I'm part, in fact, of this working group. It's called Space Mission Planning Advisory Group of the United Nations. Essentially, we decide what to do in the case of an incoming asteroid and how we can plan for any action that is avoiding a disaster. Where AI can help there is, again, in sort of improving our ability to predict that there is an impact, but also in designing a solution to that impact. So to have a fast evaluation, for example, of whether one deflection approach is working better than another deflection approach. So we completed, in fact, in March, an exercise together with NASA and other countries that are part of this Space Mission Planning Advisory Group, in which we try to deflect an asteroid, a pretend asteroid, to see how well prepared we are. And we tested different techniques. One way is to ram into the asteroid with a spacecraft. You can also push it gently by blowing ions to the asteroid, and you move it.
Gently, emphasis on gently.
And of course, I mean, like in movies, that there is also the nuclear option. Okay, so you can do that as well.
Oh, wow!
It's I mean, it's blowing my mind. It's so interesting, so fascinating. We've always seen space as this thing, or at least the media has always made space seem like it's this kind of inter-nation rivalry. It was U.S. versus Russia. It's all this kind of stuff. Is AI making the nature of space collaboration more globally united?
I'm not so sure.
Okay.
I think in the last few months we have seen how individuals are driving the collaboration agenda across the world.
Yeah.
What, when you touch upon individuals there, what's the thing that, I mean, firstly, is collaboration needed? Is it a good thing, or actually maybe something which is detrimental? Or and what can, if it is a good thing, what can be done to make it a more collaborative space mission?
Yeah, no, collaboration is definitely needed. I mean, if you think of how airspace on Earth works, it works because everyone obeys to the same rules. That is even more so in space, because you can't really land in space. Things keep moving and they occupy the globe. So you don't have only the space on top of a particular country. Okay, satellites, you know, fly over multiple countries or provide signals to multiple countries. So collaboration is essential. It's a difficult thing because technology basically advances way faster than regulations. I mean, the private sector, for example, has exploded very, very fast, way faster than any regulatory body or any country could agree on anything. But yeah, no, we definitely need a lot of collaborations across countries.
I've loved chatting with you so much, and I'm sorry for this final question that I'm about to ask, but I have to ask this. James, don't judge me when I say we are chatting to a professor of space. Will AI boost the chance of us encountering extraterrestrial activity?
Brilliant.
I'm not sure I have an answer for that. Could be.
I've left you speechless. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you and learning more about space and how AI is transforming what we do there.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you so much for giving us some time. And yeah, let's see how we get on with the asteroids. More still, extraterrestrial life.
You're welcome.
Well, there we go. We quite literally talked to a rocket scientist.
I don't know if he loved your closer on extraterrestrials.
I think I lost him the second I made a rocket science joke. I don't know. I don't think rocket scientists are used to dealing with idiots like me. Oh. I apologise, but I had to ask the extraterrestrial question because, let's face it, it was on at least 50% of everyone listening's minds and probably more.
He was fascinating, really, and I wonder whether... I mean, just think what you'd have to sort of studied in the stuff he's seeing every day. And, you know, I'm there asking him about asteroids and trying to pin him down on extraterrestrial stuff. He was more cautious than I thought he'd be, actually.
Do you know what's interesting, though? Even someone as clever as that at the forefront of technology, and we always think through the last 100 years, we always think spacecraft is like at the forefront of human advancement. And even when you're speaking to an expert in that space, they're still a bit unsure about AI. They're not all over it. They're not on top of it. And it's very interesting.
Yeah, and again, I feel like we've heard this with a few guests now. It's not just solely about the technology. I mean, he was saying the fact that they can't get the collaboration bit right, and it's actually people and relationships, which is arguably more important than how good the tech is. And that just feels like a sort of theme that we keep coming back on as well.
Very, very interesting stuff, but thank you so much for joining us. So let's move on now to something which usually I've been a bit on the fence of until the other day when we took this podcast live to the IAB Engage stage. We did the AI Challenge, and for the first time ever, James lost, and it's brought me confidence.
Did you win? We both lost. The audience are right.
But you didn't win. So anyway, it's Space Team this week. Let's crack on with it. I'm going to win. This is the week I make my comeback. I start to gain a point on the leaderboard. And here to tell us all about our space-themed AI challenge is the incredible, the astronomical...
Well done.
Molly, our producer.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
This week, space-themed...
Quickly jump in here. You joined us at the IAB Engage. You were the voice of God, booming out to several hundred people. Did you enjoy your voice sounding so fantastic in a brilliant theatre? Soho Place, nonetheless. Do you know Martin Freeman doing a play there in a few days? And Molly's voice and our awful faces.
Rubbing shoulders with
everywhere.
The stars.
Incredible.
They should be lucky that we warmed it up nicely.
Did you enjoy it?
Should be. Yeah, we warmed it up for them. It was really good. It was nice to see everybody getting involved and also getting it wrong as well. Yeah.
All right, space theme challenge this week, Mol.
Yeah, so similar to the music challenge we did a couple of weeks ago, I put in a prompt to the same website, but to create a sort of space-based motion picture soundtrack, very dramatic.
Interesting.
Think like, I don't know, Star Wars, Interstellar, that sort of thing. I've got four tracks here. I'm not going to tell you how many are AI. I'm just not going to tell you this week.
It's gone up a couple of gears, hasn't it?
Okay,
I'm just going to kick off with the first one.
More dramatic.
Bit generic is my thoughts, but I'm going to reserve judgment until I've heard number two.
Number two.
Not sure about that.
Is that space? That's I'm trying to place.
No, I can see you putting like otherworldly sounds into ChatGPT and that coming back.
Maybe.
I'm ruling that out for me personally.
Yeah, on the fence for that one.
End of Midsummer Murders or
yeah,
Lord like, of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring.
Yeah. Very much, yeah, very much like ITV Sunday drama.
Yeah.
Let's hear number three.
Okay.
No, not for me. Definitely not for me. Not for me.
We'll see.
Not for me. I think that sounds, I can just see the prompts of space and a Hans Zimmer ripoff right there. If that is a real person that's made it, I'd be worried that Hans Zimmer is going to be suing me.
They're calling him Hans Zimmer.
And AI Zipper. Should we hear the last one, James?
Yes.
Come on.
Please.
Here comes number four. I'll give you a hint, seeing as you mentioned Hans Zimmer. The one or ones that are not AI are by Hans Zimmer.
Right.
Oh! So maybe Hans Zimmer. You see, oh my goodness! Can we just admit? Can we just take a second to go? I'm genius. You've been banging on about your genius. I've just called Hans Zimmer on this, and I've beaten the game.
Space is not my specialist subject.
I don't think that. I think that last one is AI because I do think it sounded very monotone and flat.
So you've ruled.
I've ruled two and four out. Molly, can we say multiple that are real?
You can say multiple, but I won't tell you.
Giving nothing away.
Okay. Yeah, nothing's given away.
I think one and three are the real ones.
I've got this luxury of being four up, so...
Don't bang on
I'm not trying to be blasé about it, but I also thought it was three, so I'm banking three. I probably think two as well. Two and three for me.
It would be funny if, like, none of them were real, or they were all real, but...
Well, let me... No.
Imagine.
So you both think there was two that were real?
Yeah, I think
but
so.
But you were right in that sense.
Okay.
Number one was real.
Get in there.
And number four was real.
Oh, number four was rubbish. That was Hans Zimmer. So, I'll tell you what, the AI one that was three.
That was immense.
It was great.
I was doing the voiceover in my head.
Hans Zimmer should be suing AI. I was right. Hold on, Molly. What does that mean?
Yeah, you know what it means.
Come on. Get in there. Oh, I'm on the leaderboard, baby.
Christ.
Oh, wow.
He's not going to finish.
How does that feel? How does that feel, baby?
That's a shame.
Great. That's really, really good. I am celebrating. It is a bit like being 4-0 down in a football game, scoring a goal and doing a knee slide in front of the away fans.
Pick up the
I
ball
am
and
still
get
being
on with it.
Battered. But I have hope. James has lost twice in 1 week and that brings me joy. And I think on that note, we should maybe say goodbye.
On the news next week, Hans Zimmer sues AI.
Thank you so much to our brilliant guest today. James, would you like to do the pronunciation for me?
Thank you very much to Professor Massimiliano
Vazzelli. Lovely stuff. Of course, if you have a question for James that you would like him to tackle next week, drop us an email or leave a comment on the socials. Also, don't forget, if you would like to subscribe or rate us and help our algorithms, you've listened to the end. We are so grateful for it. We'd be even more grateful if you did that. A huge thanks to Team AI Having a Clue, our brilliant producers, Molly Carter and David May. But for now, James,
stay curious.